At this point, if people could raise their hands if they have a question. If you want to direct it to a particular person or just ask the panel, we don't have a lot of time. And at the end of the set, we want to leave time so that the four can say, what can we do now? Like, in, given the information we have, are there things we can do to get a better coverage? Yeah?
For Miles Howell, there were some allusions I believe you made that your family almost threatened to be bombed for you speaking out. I was wondering if you could speak on that a little bit.
No, it was. There was a comment that was left on an article that I had written that said, unfortunately, your house has been declined for fire insurance. Too bad for you. Something like that. I don't have it written down exactly. It wasn't to be bombed. It was to be set ablaze while
was
I was gone.
A blog post or something of that nature?
It was a comment left on an article I had written. Okay. Someone wrote, basically, we're going to burn your house down while you're gone.
I have a question. There was not a pro-Israel or against Israel. I'm from India. My issue is, like, you showed nicely, there's so much Israel, so much Palestine, but if you see Arabic media, any Arabic country, you will find the other way around. 99% Arabic and 1% Israel. So that becomes sometimes, like, again, similar kind of coverage story. That was one issue. Secondly, I was myself was in Israel for some time, so I did find that the moment you say they are from Arabic countries, they do check a lot. So that is the fact of it. So how do you react to get influence or opinion in those countries when the effect of the news of Israel comes to those countries? It's panel, not individually.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
The question is, like, naturally, most of the Western media is strongly pro-Israel and very... they have very little sympathy for Palestinian cause. But the Arabic media also have same thing. They have it
in reverse.
Just the reverse and very heavily. Just to hide their own deficiencies of governance. It's not the kind of truth they are using for their own kind of defense.
Well, what you're indicating is that there's bias. From both sides, in reverse.
This bias has been used in the past 60 years specifically by Arabic countries not to improve upon their own people.
So right, I understand. Mm-hmm. Understand what you're saying, and that it relates to the issue that journalism is about power, isn't it? And it's about what the Americans did in the 20th century was discover a way without using censorship to control the media, and how they do it is through information. They, for instance, you know, the White House press contingent is regularly fed information from the White House and from the government, and so that's the one of the methods that the American administration uses to control journalism. It's public relations. Other countries, some Arab countries, where there is not a free press, are not so sophisticated and may, in fact, use intimidation, censorship, and so on. But the effect can be the same. It's just that our ways of relying on public relations seem softer and actually are more effective propaganda because the propaganda itself is hidden, whereas more blatant propaganda, such as from the former Soviet Union or the Egyptian government, the population can see what's going on. So, in a sense, and Chomsky points this out in his in the Manufacturing Consent, in a sense, it's kind of hard to attack the media system here because officially we have a free press. And it's free to everyone who can afford the $1 billion to own one, you know.
Yeah.
This is a comment. It's not a real question. But this gentleman that was just talked about said something about how this has been going on, the media bias, and as it's gone on for decades.
Yes.
It brought me back to 1972. and I was going to university, took a history course, and this professor said something about the Palestinian side of the story. And I kind of went like that, because I spoke up, as I usually do, and said I didn't realize there was a Palestinian side to the story. Neither, and she asked other students the same thing, and everybody felt the same way, which I thought was quite telling. She went on and had us look at the issue of the media bias and how, and towards Israel. And it was a really life-changing experience for me. And it was kind of forced me to come face-to-face. It was kind of scary. It made me come face-to-face with my ignorance. And I was really uncomfortable with that and didn't want to feel that way anymore. But I just want to point out this really strongly. If you want to look at an example of censorship and control of the media, read the front page of the Chronicle Herald tonight. And there's a story on it about how on UI and on you read it, yeah. And how the government is just closing down all of the information on the UI that the change they're making UI in the budget. And it is scary.
One thing that they did do, and this is not relating to this issue, is that most people don't know, and the Toronto Star was good at reporting it, the Harper Conservatives have shut down the National Council of Welfare, which is the one agency that the media and other governments and academics have used to compare welfare statistics in Canada. As well as the National Roundtable on the Environment and the Economy is going, and Statistics Canada is being cut about in half. So there's a real attack on sources of information.
Yeah.
And that's really
that
troubling.
The National Council of Welfare, what they were doing was being duplicated by Campaign 2000 and Canada Without Poverty. And they, Canada Without Poverty and Campaign 2000 came up with a media release saying, no,
yeah.
We don't do that like they do. Anyhow, sorry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give another example that ties in with Bruce and Miles. And this was Stephen Lund, who's the head of Nova Scotia Business Inc., was on Main Street, CBC Main Street, which has a host, young woman from the coast, you know, you expect her to be smart and informed. So Stephen Lund went to Israel. I don't know who paid for it, but I'd like to know. I may even call and ask.
No, he didn't.
anyway, he's on there like extolling the virtues of Israel, so modern, so innovative, so scientific, and of the young people in Israel, how entrepreneurial they are, because, you know, they all have to serve in the army, and this military service serves them so well when they go out into private business. And I mean, you know, this is on the CBC with a host who you would expect better of, and this is someone who's Business Inc. I think it's part of the government, isn't it?
I mean, it was outrageous.
I'll give another personal anecdote, just because that's what I do, I guess. In my experience traveling the world, young Israelis are among the most damaged from post-traumatic stress of any contingent of the population that you will find. They're the ones doing the hardest drugs, going to the hardest parties, dancing all night long to get away from what they're going through. And I truly believe that we should be looking at people like Gabor Maté and his writings in terms of suffering from traumas and stresses and how what you're doing to get over that. And I don't think from a personal perspective that a lot of people in Israel or as a country have really gotten over that. Have gotten over the trauma of the Holocaust, and I think that's just sort of carrying on and now is sort of ingrained in education, and it's a very troubling situation.
I'd like to suggest that what you, why is it that they can broadcast that and it doesn't need to be balanced?
Yes.
It's because of the framing, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
But I would say that you have to supply your own flack. You have to complain.
I wrote to Main Street twice because I did it on their online form, and then you're never sure if they get those. So then I sent an email. And I sent an email to Stephen Lund's office too. No response from anyone. It's like you're invisible. If you, you know, if you question these things, it's like you're not even there.
Did you receive any response from Main Street at all?
Not even an acknowledgement of receiving.
Yeah, I would write to the executive producer and say that if you don't hear a response, you're going to take it to the ombudsman. And that does get a response. They are obligated to respond to you, and if they don't, you can't go to the ombudsman before you complain to them. Once you've done that, then you're free to make a complaint to the ombudsman. You could even cite the Miles Howe case where they had to balance, and in this case. So again, that's what I would urge, is that we start supplying our own flack to the media so that they know that if they do something like that, they're going to hear about it and they're going to have to answer for it.
Yeah, there is a modus operandi that I've seen in action. And I'll give you just one example. And I've been active on this issue for a long time. There was a meeting that we were having at St. Mary's University, and we put up posters for it on the issue of the Middle East, the Israel-Palestine issue. I got a call from somebody on the student union saying, this Palestinian guy on the student union saying, the posters are coming down. So I called the head of the operations guy at the student union. I said, who's taking down the posters? He said, we are, because we got a complaint saying that the posters were anti-Semitic. And of course, there was nothing about the poster at all that was anti-Semitic. It just was a speaker on Israel and Palestine. So I said, no, they're not coming down. They're going up. And you have my name. How come you didn't call me to say there was a complaint? So anyway, the posters went back up. But what I see is a modus operandi that operates like this. And I gotta give credit to the other side for pursuing this with vigor. First of all, complain about everything. Every single thing that mentions Israel or Palestine in a light that and sheds bad light on Israel, complain. Accuse people behind it of anti-Semitism. Or if you can't get away with that, then of wanting to destroy the state of Israel. Build in plausible deniability. So that if you're accusing of anti-Semitism, you can say, well, it wasn't me. It must have been somebody else. I was misquoted. I didn't really say they were anti-Semitic, and this happens all the time. And of course, what follows on from that is then to deny. You built in the plausible deniability, then you deny. If the event goes off successfully, you say, well, what's everybody complaining about? It went off. It shows that there's freedom of speech. If it doesn't go off, you keep quiet. And that's the modus operandi. And it works more than half of the time.
Mm-hmm. Any comments on it? Should we go and move on? Okay, if you want to say something, just pipe up, or I'll try to. I'm trying to get as many people having a chance to participate if they can. Yeah, and I saw a hand there and there, and you're next.
There was a hand in the back for a while, too.
No, I got him next.
Oh, okay.
After Tamara.
A comment. I was one of the point people dealing with Dalhousie on the George Galloway event. And so there was a couple, when we started getting pressure from Dalhousie, you know, I went to the president's office and I said, if I don't get a meeting with the president, you know, right away, within the next 24 hours, I'm going to the media on this. And, you know, we got a, you know, to try to resolve it, to negotiate it. And, you know, we got a meeting. And Judy came with me. We still went to the media anyways. But I noticed that the online articles about the bureaucratic barriers that we had with Dalhousie, the majority of the emails were people, you know, criticizing the event and then saying, for instance, that St. Andrew's Church was going to host us, attacking St. Andrew's. And it's and then we also noticed when your article was up on the Coast website that the majority of the responses were very hostile against you. And you know, many of us in the Halifax Peace Coalition were feeling like, well, that must be really hard for poor Miles. And look at all of this, you know, this really hostile, you know, vitriolic comments, and how that, like, that's very hard to deal with. And so I think you're right, Bruce, that we really have to support take the time, like, that others have, to send in the emails and make the phone calls and try to provide our voice to support, because it's really tough.
Maybe I shouldn't say this, but I wrote for the Coast for 16 years, often appearing weekly, and the online comments began to get to me. I mean, I shouldn't have been reading them. It was the same one. They're anonymous. Joe Blow is one of them. They're anonymous, and they come after you and after you, and you may, I was being paid the princely sum of $100, spend 5 days doing research on a piece, and then have them say he's got all his facts wrong. So somebody reading the piece reads it, and then they read that, and they, oh, he's got his facts wrong again. And I have stopped writing for the Coast, not for that reason, but because I moved away. But I can tell you, everybody in this room, that that's one big relief, that I'm not under attack from those people, the same ones week after week. And very rarely, about twice or three times, would somebody defend me. I used to go on there and defend myself under my own name. But very rarely, the left is very bad at defending journalists who speak up.
In the back, and then here, then our guy, and I had, was it two? I saw a hand over there.
Yeah,
but
sorry.
I think it's fell in the back again.
Sure. Bruce, you're complaining just a few minutes ago of a lack of balance in the portrayal of certain things. I've got to tell you, it perked up my ears. I don't see a lot of balance.
I wasn't complaining about a lack of balance. If you read my piece on the website, it is how journalists define balance that I think is crucial to understand. I am in favor of balance, but in media reporting. But it's the way that balance is defined, and we saw an example of that with the Miles Howe story, that I think is crucial to understand, that balance is not really balance. And you'll see that if you look at my Ipperwash example, you'll see that one of the reports, the first one, deals with the natives and the military, and it's perfectly balanced. The military with a $16 billion a year budget, and the natives with nothing there. And it's balanced, it's even-handed, it's perfect. It meets all the CBC standards for balance. But in reality, as we now know with hindsight, it was massively unbalanced, unfair, and inaccurate. And so, you know, that's what I'm on about when I talk about media reporting. As for a panel discussion, that's another matter. We're not talking about media reporting there.
I'd also be interested to know, what would you have rather seen tonight?
I guess my perspective, and you know, I say this every time I come to one of these events.
What are one of these events?
Something organized by, the Arabs.
No. I'm one of Canadian's Arabs and Jews, and I'm a Jew, so I'm not an Arab. So
yeah, I'm a Jew too.
Judy, he just was struggling with the name of the organization, that's all.
I'm just trying to name the organization.
Yeah.
And when I say one of these events, I'm getting sort of an anti-Israel event or an event that sheds... I'm not trying to use an inflammatory term. What term would you like me to use? An event that calls attention to Israel or criticizes Israel? So I'm just trying to be neutral here, that's all. I apologize. When I come to them, Israel apartheid was another event that I'm trying to make connection to. When I come, I always come from a place of Israel does, when I say Israel, I mean the Jews of Israel, the military structure, the government, do all kinds of things that are morally unacceptable and unethical, as do the Palestinians. I come from a perspective of there is no good guy and bad guy going on here. There are certain systemic inequalities. I'm not arguing against that. My concern is when one side gets painted as all righteous and the other side gets painted as all blameworthy. And I'm not trying to put those words into your mouths, but my concern is we're not looking at things from multiple perspectives and lenses. We're looking at things through one. That's my concern.
Okay, and who is, I think Billy, is that?
Well, it's funny it leads into that because I could go off on another tangent entirely with the coverage of indigenous issues in this country right now.
Yes.
If someone come and sat here and had a discussion in the panel about it, the obligation to provide, quote, balance and say, you know, putting a black hat as opposed to a white hat on Harper, well, look at the way that he's dealing with the issues of indigenous people right now, and there's no way to have a balanced point of view. I can see a certain harmony, but you say balance, it means like 50-50, and there ain't no 50-50 there.
I don't mean 50-50.
There's no 50-50.
Not 100-0, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and then I was actually, when I took a look at and wrote down when you said unemployment being the fault of the Arabs, whoever said that, and then I was going to ask Sharon to actually address that because of the issue coming up right now about the EI and the omnibus bill, you know, and what effect that has as he brings in those bills, and then the regulations that govern the application of that. I was driving, I was in a car driving home today, and there was, what's her name, Finley or whatever, speaking about it and saying, well, we've got it covered this way, we've got it covered that way. All of that is bullshit because in the regulations which the cabinet and the finance committee now have complete control over by that omnibus bill, then they can change every one of those regulations. And I'm speaking as someone that did UIC advocacy 20 years ago when these very same people were saying the same thing, and this is the most vicious attack on the poor, immigrants, everything right now. And I think, you know, I don't want to divert the discussion we're having here, but if we're talking media, keep your eye out, folks, and start ducking because it's going to get much worse with the lazy, good-for-nothing Maritimers and the entitlement. And Sharon and I were talking down at the parade square. When you talk about entitlement, don't look at me. Look at Bev Oda.
I have one more question. Do you go to events sponsored by the JDF and raise the same complaints? Have you ever been to any of those events and said, where is the conversation? Where is the Palestinian side? I'm just curious.
Absolutely.
From my own. Do you go to Israeli, pro-Israeli week, if those things do exist? Or if they are 51 weeks of the year, which are pro-Israeli weeks?
And I can tell you that I'm always interested in balance, personally. I don't, again, as I've said, there are many horrible things that have been done to countless numbers of Palestinians by Israelis. I'm not trying to take away from that reality.
Could I just PS my way?
Well, we got a couple.
Take a second, and that is, do we really sometimes have to have this so-called balance?
I don't think so. But
well, that's my point. It's how balance is defined, and your raising of this issue reminds me very much of the way CBC and the other media treat balance. It's not multiple perspectives. It's, okay, we've got to have, we had Miles Howe on, now we have to have this other guy on. And the ombudsman is satisfied with that in his report. He says that was fine to do, even though John, what's his name, said things that weren't true, but he went unchallenged. That is not balance, and we're not getting true balance from our media when it comes to Israel-Palestine. We did with South Africa.
That's simply reversing the David and Goliath. We're not getting anywhere that achieves peace between...
Okay, well, I think in terms of balance, we've got a number of other questions on board as well, and which we'd like to cover.
But I
think there is...
I agree with that guy, though.
I'm just saying, We've got a number of people had their hands up. And I want to hear from you.
You don't raise the voice.
Yeah. I've got a hand here, a hand up here, and then down there, if that's okay. So you know where you're coming, and or maybe Margaret's before. Anyway, I'll do my best here in terms of how I recall people's hands going up. Yeah?
I just want to say my view of balance, because the media reporting has been presenting overwhelmingly one point of view. Here, at this hour, in this place, we are providing a second point of view, and that is, to my mind, balancing.
That's right.
Right.
I agree.
Judy and then Margaret. I may not be the right order, but...
I think we, as readers, need to be more critical, and as consumers of the media, and I understand that in schools now, I think this is a good thing, they're taught media literacy, young kids, not to believe just one source, to look at many, and so on. Okay, that's one point. And the other thing, when we were talking about, I think Bruce and somebody else about, what you write, and then the feedback after, the criticism, the flack. And if indeed the person who is paying you supports you, I think of Jan Wong. And how,
good example.
I wish I'd read the darn thing, but it was quite an article about Francois Lépine and the Montreal massacre. And the paper disowned her. And she got threats, terrible phone calls at home from, I think, very ardent supporters of the French who thought she was, her tact was totally against this guy because he was French. And indeed, she had to see a psychiatrist, but the newspaper didn't support her at all. They wanted to have some sort of sick note. It was absolutely awful. Anyway, and as I was driving today, I heard Stevie Cameron being interviewed similarly about things that she said and which she thought was her truth, her honesty, and almost getting punished for it. So do you hear what I'm saying? So people don't want to read the truth, and a lot of people are afraid to write it because they've been given this frame, they've been given this pattern, and it must conform to it. So it's really kind of frightening world we're living in. What can we do?
I think
I've got the picture. I think that I'm critical enough, but I think all kinds of people, you know, they say, well, it's got to be true. I saw it on TV. It's true.
If white middle-class people are frightened and intimidated about not expressing their views, what about Palestinians in Canada, all other Arabs in Canada, facing the Islamophobia on top of everything else? What are the chances that one of the struggles, frankly, in our own organization is the outreach to that community in Halifax to make other ways we can organize our activities to make them feel comfortable to be able to express themselves so we can learn more? But there must be enormous pressure to, you're in Canada, you're trying to get along, you're trying to make a living, and so forth, and you're not about to draw any attention to yourself in the same way that several people have said how uncomfortable it is to write a letter or something like that and draw that attention to yourself. And I think that's, I mean, if we're frightened or if we feel intimidated by it, it's not surprising that this whole Islam, the Arab community in Canada and in Halifax is silence made of invisible. I mean, it's just, and then part of the what we were trying to do tonight is trying to understand that a little more, right? Because it must be very difficult to be Palestinian trying to explain to someone who you think is a friend about what's going on when they say, how can that be true? None of that's in the paper, none of that's on TV, none of that's around. And that's why part of what we are attempting to do is to understand why it is the way it is, and what can be done to create a better understanding. Because our organization isn't interested in misrepresentation of what the facts of the Middle East. We're not interested in opinions that favor the Palestinians if they're based on falsehoods and so forth. But we're up against, clearly, organizations that don't want even the facts mentioned. That everything should be shut down. As Larry presented, that's the way they operate. And in many situations, it's not a question of this is a distortion of the facts. It's the very presentation of the facts. Anyway,
Can I say one thing too? In terms of putting it back into Bruce's perspective, why do you keep doing this? Like, when you write something and then there's a comment like, "I'm going to burn your house down while you're not there," or "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you." And it is because of the fact that, what do you do with that privilege when you have it? Like, look, I'm a white guy, you know, like, hey, it's pretty easy to be me. And so for me to say, what do I do with this privilege right now? That's what you should ask yourself, because there are many, many people that do not have that and that cannot speak up, perhaps. And I don't aim to speak for them, but I'll speak as best I can from my perspective. And that's the one of the only things that keeps you going through a terrible climate that it often feels like you have to put on a hazmat suit just to write something just like, oh yeah, like 10-1, Palestinian victims versus Israeli. Hate, 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 you know? But it's true. So.
Yes, sir. Sorry for the delay.
This goes back quite a ways, but, I read a blog. It's an unread blog, but I get a great deal of comfort out of writing it. But one of the things that's interesting is that whenever I write about Israel, there are comments. There are no comments the rest of the time. You can go back through now 4 or 5 years of logs. For some periods of time, they're written almost daily, and other times they're only written once every 6 months. But it doesn't matter if I write about Israel. So there is an awful lot of monitoring going on by someone somewhere, by some group somewhere. The other thing is that, and this has nothing to do with Israel and Palestine, just the right wing generally, that there are tons of bots, right, of automated things running around leaving comments.
Yeah.
That they're not even real people. In fact, one of the articles I read suggested that 80% of the comments that are left on electronic media are, in fact, created by robot commenters as opposed to real people. So it came up as you're talking about all those. Now, you know, in the coast in Halifax or my little blog, it's probably a real person, but it is kind of interesting to think that there's this kind of sense that we get that there's a lot more people writing sort of from the right or writing defending Israel when some of that may be automated. That was really all.
There are commercial reasons for why the media, like the coast, want these online comments. I took it up with Kyle. I was upset enough about it. And I wrote about a plague of right-wing trolls on my website. And Kyle said, well, maybe we'll tighten up the rules. But the reason they want comments is it generates traffic back to the site. And the traffic shows up in the hits. And the hit they can present that to advertisers.
I think they need captions, though.
So they're willing to hang their writers out to dry because they're desperate. Like the coast really needs money. They're suffering. If you see the editorial space that they have now compared to what they used to, it's really notable. Just in today's, there's barely any editorial copy there at all. No editorial. And so it's serious.
Who you mentioned, that you had heard a story about Palestine or about Israel depriving Palestinians of water.
Yes, it was an online story. I didn't hear his on-air version.
Okay.
But it was a fairly good story.
Yeah, I also heard a story on CBC News, I guess it was at 6 o'clock on the radio a few weeks ago, from Derek Stoffel talking about the hunger strike of the Palestinian prisoners. and it was quite a, you know, it was well reported, but quite brief, with no real background information, and then there was never any follow up. You know, I mean, these sort of isolated stories by Aristotle coming up here and there. And I'm just wondering how is it that he is allowed to report these stories? And yeah, I'm just sort of wondering about that. My other question is about writing letters to the editor. I've done that on occasion. I've written a number of articles on different subjects, sometimes on Palestine, Israel, but on other subjects that I feel strongly about. And I'm wondering how effective is that in terms of trying to change public.
Were your letters published?
They were published.
Oh, well, then you've got your voice out there and people will see that. There's always the risk in writing a letter to the editor that it won't be published. And so, but at least the journalist who vets the letter sees it. But if you want to make a complaint about coverage, it's more effective. You could write a letter too, but also make a direct complaint to the reporter. There's often an email address there, or to one of the editorial staff. As for Derek Stoffel and his reporting, that's the other thing I didn't say tonight, and it's hard if you've never worked in a newsroom. Newsrooms are battlefields. The editors hate the reporters. I've been both. The reporters hate the editors. They're a field of ideological strife because there is no one reality, right? I'm the reporter, I go out to a story and I come back and the editors don't want that story, sometimes for various reasons. And I'm angry about that. So that it's not as though newsrooms have one, they present one face to the world, but actually there's a lot of competition and a lot of strife within them and contests over stories and how they should be framed and how they should be reporting. Reported. Journalists are not generally happy campers. And it's, I'm trying to get my story on, everybody else is trying to get their stories on, and I'm not happy with the way it was edited. The public never hears any of this, but it is important to know that there are allies within news organizations who feel the way that I feel about Israel-Palestine, and there are the Paul Schneiderites who are firmly on the other side. So that don't despair and think that the Herald all thinks one way, because newsrooms are battlegrounds, and frames shift, although it takes quite a bit to shift the frame. But look at the Occupy movement. The Occupy movement was going nowhere. The New York Times was ridiculing it. And all of a sudden, I don't know why, the Times published this article, this editorial, saying that when it came to inequality in society, the Occupy movement had a point, they were right. And after that, the mainstream media, for a while at least, took the movement seriously. Amazing, but it happened.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on what you said about the risk of writing letters to the editor because they might not get published. Well, there are risks of having the letters published as well. And I wrote a letter to the editor who was published in the Chronicle Herald, and it was trying to present a Palestinian perspective on something. And Mark David stole the letter, published it on his website, and accused me of anti-Semitism and several other commentators and similar remarks. I tried to contact him and get him to take it down. Finally, after about a month, I wrote him a letter and said I was the owner of the copyright on that material. Remove it from your website, and he did, although it did take some time, but he did. So you mentioned about the comments that you got as a writer. Well, that's a risk. You know, even if you try and write a letter to the editor, present an alternative perspective, you run a risk.
It's fair enough for people to comment, but they do so anonymously, and then people who might be supporting you never comment, so that you're left hanging out there. And I mean, so what? I mean, I shouldn't be so sensitive, but you get tired of it.
Yeah.
I have a question for Bruce. What if about the balance that you talked about? What if this balance negates fairness in a real life situation? For example, if a government is like killing its own people, if you put balance in the news there, you're going to be saying, oh yeah, this is the point of view that there are terrorist groups in this country, and the government is, like for example, what's happening in Syria, and the government is killing its, like, you know, those terrorist groups, and the other story. So that that balance would actually create injustice, and, you know, and it's not going to be fair for both sides. So how would the journalist, like, deal with that? How do you think they're dealing with it now, anyways?
I had a mentor at CBC, he's dead now, named Phil Calder. He tended to train the new people. He'd been a foreign correspondent, he'd been around forever. And we had a very ignorant boss in those days. This was back in the apartheid days in South Africa. And our boss, CBC Radio, actually authorized a trip to South Africa by one of our reporters. It was kind of an unauthorized thing, to tell the other side, the side of the white government. And Phil said to me, there are no two sides in this situation. What the white government is doing with apartheid is indefensible, just as what Hitler and the Nazis were doing with Jews is indefensible. And there is no balance there. There is no other side to say, therefore, we have to interview Mr. Hitler and get his point of view. That, I agree with you, would be massively unbalanced. But the way it works out every day in the media is that Stephen Harper and his government get their say on things, and then the victims of their policies are, if they're heard at all, they don't have the same public relations clout and the same money behind them to present a balance. So just, it shows up in my IPRWASH coverage, just having the military spokesman on, the native spokespeople on, and then leaving it at that without investigating further is massively unbalanced.
Do you want to say something? Sure if the event
very briefly, I think there's a fallacy here, the idea that every meeting has to have balance. If I call a meeting to present a point of view, and you call a meeting to present the opposite point of view, then we have balance. But to insist that every meeting, in fact, that every speaker, that perhaps I, giving one side, I have to give the other side myself, or everything has to be a debate, I mean, that's ridiculous. If I were the president of a university, I wanted to make sure that many views were being presented. I would look at over a number of months or a year and look at all the different meetings, not one particular meeting. So to accuse people of not having balance, Howard Zinn, famous American writer, just in this other hall when he was here, said the following phrase, which I thought was great. He said, you know, in the marketplace of ideas, I'm just pushing my cart. And if you don't want to buy, you don't buy. But don't push me out of the market. And I like that.
Any other comments?
Well, yes. Another famous writer said something like, I feel a moral obligation to tell the other side. And I think what this meeting is about is the other side hasn't been told. And so they're using this format, most of the people here, to tell that moral side or fulfill his obligation as a reporter to tell the other side. And that's pretty much what this has been about. That's why perhaps there's no need with all the media talking about taking Israel's side on many, many, many subjects, the Palestinians need a place to hear their side of it expounded.
Okay, do you want to, I just think, want to make that announcement before we lose anybody else?
Yeah.
Well, this is not about the subject we're discussing, but I would like to make an announcement about another event that's coming up, and it's on June the 7th, and it is sponsored by Kairos and many other local organizations, and it's a part of a Women of Courage tour. And it is three women who will be sharing their stories and experiences as human rights defenders. One woman is from the West Bank, Bethlehem, and one is from Columbia, and one is from Halifax. And it will be at St. Andrew's United Church at 7 p.m., and most of you would probably have gotten some word, but if not, I'd be happy to send you the notice by email or poster, whatever, but hope people are able to come to that event.
Where is it?
7 o'clock at St. Andrew's United Church on Coburg Road, Thursday, June 7th.
Hey, Linda, how come no men on the panel? Where's the balance?
Yeah, that's us.
Maybe just to wind
just
up. Just to wind up, because you've been very... I think the quality of the panel and the discussion is evidence of people's commitment to want to find it interesting and really hang in there longer than we planned to have it. But I've really... found it terrific, and what we talked about is what Bruce mentioned. One thing about what we can do in terms of being more effective in supporting the expression of all the facts that relate to Israel Palestine, not just the ones that the media tend to dwell on. And so, if you don't have to say anything, but I'm just giving the opportunity to the panel. If there are suggestions that of things we might do, things that individuals could do or in groups, so that would be like the useful way to sort of sum up. So if you want to start first or pass, you can do whatever you like.
Where is it going to pass, Jim? But because I don't have any really bright ideas, I mean, but I think the kind of event that you're having here tonight is something that helps. I mean, it doesn't happen. Where I come from is a smaller town, Fredericton. It's hard to get this many people interested in any particular topic just because it's one tenth the size. But the other thing is, just this is partly echoing what Larry said, balance is really out of place in lots of situations. Let's suppose I'm a historian. I'm not, but let's suppose I am. I'm giving a lecture on history of the 1940s, talking about the Holocaust. Do I have to spend half of the hour denying the Holocaust to be balanced? I mean, this is where this is the kind of absurdity you get into if you take the ideal of balance that Bruce has eloquently demolished as a hoax to mask bias in the media. Things go to absurd extremes. We're just playing a game. We're being drawn into a trap that was every day set for us. So, thanks.
One other idea, although it's not necessarily workable, the media, as I say, tend to report what the national government's foreign policy is. They would, if there were a challenge to that from, say, the official opposition, the NDP in Ottawa, that would get reported. That is why on national issues, the media do report what the government is saying, what the opposition is saying. Often the opposition get the better of it. They get better coverage. if you could get the federal NDP, I'm not sure you could, to raise questions about this issue and the Harper government's position on it, then the media will cover that. And it opens up a space. It's just when Jean Chrétien said we weren't going to Iraq, the Canadian media suddenly had a space to be critical of George Bush's adventure, a space that the American media did not seem to have. So it's opening up that space for coverage, and if the official opposition, for instance, were to raise issues in a sustained way, the media would then cover that. But whether they have the courage to or not, I don't know.
In my opinion, something we can do here, I'll think back to a conversation I had with a great journalist, in my opinion, Amir Haas, when we were sitting in a harbor in Ios Nikolaos in Greece. And there was a large number of people from a large number of backgrounds on our boat, the Tahrir, trying to get to Gaza. And Amir Haas, as an Israeli, said that in future endeavors to try to get to Gaza, that the people aboard should be highly aware of the indigenous people from where they come from. Because, and this is by no means, this is an incredibly important issue. The struggle that goes on in the Middle East is incredibly important. But sometimes, and I'm not downplaying anything, but sometimes it's easy to look abroad and say, over there is injustice, and I will rally against that. But there's a whole hell of a lot of injustice that's gone on here, and we need to be very, very much aware of that. And we only have so much energy for so many issues, but we also need to be, we also need to share some of that energy with our indigenous population here, because it's very important. And because of the distance or the lack of distance, more positive change might be achieved with less. I find a lot of times I look to Palestine and I feel quite helpless. But I can go down to the Friendship Center and feel perhaps I could be helpful